G&D, welcoming you back on The Fan, the show brought to you by the law firm Condori & Murat. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family. Schedule a consultation with their team today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We are looking forward to chatting with Mike Pereira, the rules analyst for Fox Sports, coming up in just a few. That conversation on The Fan today, part of our big preview of the NFL season. Danny, the kickoff has been tweaked again narrowly. Basically, the penalties for not landing the ball in the kick zone where you're allowed to have been elevated again to try to implement even more returns. But we're going into year two of the old XFL kickoff. I liked it right away because I liked it in the spring leagues, and my whole goal is just more returns, more action. The touchback is useless and futile, and what a waste of everybody's time. Yep. Start a game, have an end-over-end kick into the end zone. Dude stands with his heels on the goal line, makes the tee.
I'm a little teapot.
Yeah. With his arms out, and now we start first and 10 from the 25. So I've been a fan all along. It seems like this is growing on people a little bit because aesthetically it's very strange when you see basically 5 yards apart all of the blockers and all of the defenders on special teams from kick coverage and kick return. But where are you at on the returns? We got a lot more of them, higher percentage last year, and more bigger plays.
I do not like it. I wish they would do something simple, which is just move the kicker back because kickers can kick it further. I understand that's not on the table anymore because of the full speed, the collisions, the wedge, the injury per play stuff. I'll never get back what I want. So I'm willing to compromise on sports in a lot of ways, whereas a lot of purists and traditionalists never seem to be.
And to be clear really quickly, because this someone brought this up to me literally this week, so I think there is this lack of understanding maybe on this. They didn't get rid of kickoffs as they were before because kickers were kicking the ball too far out of the end zone for touchbacks. The reason for kickoffs done the way they are now is that the league said that's the most dangerous play and we've got to remove it from the game. Because their logic was, and they say they studied it and they have the numbers. I'm sure they do. I'll take their word for it. I don't have them. But the idea, Danny, was the full-on collision, guy getting a 50-yard running head start.
And it makes sense, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no other play like that where someone running at full speed, you know, for 47 yards absolutely jumps into the air and eviscerates you, or the collision, wham, with the guy that's, you know, in front of the wedge, so to speak, and you're just coming full speed. So they're getting rid of those collisions. Mm-hmm. That's why they now have the new alignment.
Yeah, this new dynamic kickoff. So I'll never get back what I want. I understand why. So for me, I'll make the compromise. I want returns. The touchback, where, as you said, the guy gets to go, I'm the shape of a T, and everybody just sort of jogs off, and that's fine. It gives you a chance to preview today's quarterback with like a couple stats as you're jogging onto the field. I have no interest in that. That play sucks. So whatever I have to do to get me more kick returns, sign me up for that. So I'll do it.
For me, it's not even as complicated. I like the idea of the added strategy is probably too strong, but here's what I think you should like and what I like about it. You want football plays.
Yes.
This basically just becomes a football play. It's just a running back, essentially. Teams are now putting receivers or running backs back there. And a lot of them are going with RBs because they're setting up blocks like they would, where you can design like pullers out in front and run power, so to speak, where, you know, you're kicking back a couple of guys in the you know, into the backside of the formation, and you're pulling two out in front. And I think that's why you saw Austin Ekeler for Washington, or Deebo Samuel is going to be the kick returner this year. It's just a football play. Mm-hmm. So I don't kind of know what's not to like, other than just the optics of...
It's the optics
for me. At the kickoff, they're standing 5 yards apart, and instead of any kind of a collision in speed, it just slows everybody down that they come together very slowly and quietly. What's not to like? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, it's the optics. I think it looks bizarre and... Maybe I'll get used to it. In fact, I'm sure I will. That'll just become normal if you do it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years or whatever. I also don't like the feeling. It feels like a little pooch kick now, right? Instead of these kickers aren't able to raise their arm, drop it, line it up, and blast the thing, you know, high and far. It's now kind of this like they're a soccer player taking a corner kick where they're trying to chip it in front of the 6-yard box for someone to head it in. Just the way that it looks, I don't like it. But again, I'm willing to make a lot of trades. We talk about this with baseball all the time, where I'm more old school than most, but in order for me to get my 11-year-old to watch it, it can't be like the baseball I grew up with. It just can't. I've got to change it. So I'll take a compromised version as long as, you know, the average age starts to go down of the viewer, right? Because every year it was like the average baseball fan is 57. Now they're 64. Now they're 70. And I don't want that. It's got to trend in the other direction. You got to grow the game. And it's starting to happen with some of these changes that Manfred and company have made. So that's kind of the same boat here for these kickoffs. I'll never get back what I want, which is, you know, Brian Mitchell fielding it, making one cut and trucking people. That's never coming back. I understand that. So as long as I get more returns and less touchbacks, I'm in.
There were 21% of kicks returned two seasons ago in 2023. So about one-fifth of the time, which is terrible.
Nothing, yeah.
There was a return.
It's like one or two a game.
That was up to right around 33% last year. So one out of every three kicks got brought back. Still not good enough. And the league acknowledges that. It's still not as high as they want. And that is why they have changed the rules again. So that it used to be if you get penalized because you don't land it in the kick zone, basically, you know, the ball came back out to the 30, 35-yard line. Now we're advancing it even further, closer to the 40. And so eventually it's just going to be like kicking it out of bounds. If you kick a ball that is not returnable, or you try to get cute, to your point, Danny, with the pooches and some of those things, it's just going to be first and 10 from the 40. That's how they've decided they're going to keep the kickoff return rate growing. But if that doesn't sound like a big deal, like, oh, it was 20%, now it's 33%, that's nothing. Listen to the numbers difference, though. There were 332 more kick returns in 2024 than 2023. 332 across the league.
Right.
All of those with the chance of being a big, explosive, fun football play. Because that they just like when they got rid of the extra point when it was a nothing burger from the 10-yard line, you know, 20-yard field goal or whatever, they said this is a 98% conversion. If you can go get a snack, and you don't have to worry about this play, then it shouldn't be in our sport. That's how they felt about the kickoff when 80% of the time you weren't missing anything. And so now 332 times they go, let's do this. And the bigger plays were way more bountiful. A spike in big play return. So that's 40 or more. There were 59 returns of 40 or more yards last year, which was the most we've seen in the league in 10 football seasons. So the proof's kind of in the pudding of exactly what they want to happen is happening. The rate of touchbacks decreased to approximately 64%. It was the highest it had ever been 1 year earlier at about 74%.
Yeah, we were on the bad end of that last year, if you recall, with Kevontae Turpin taking one back to the house. But
yeah.
Still, exciting play.
It's a football play.
Yeah, it's the trade-off, you know, you're kind of willing to have.
But I think the big play thing's important. The 40-yard returns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, my childhood, I'm not exaggerating on this, and I'm not just saying this because we work at the same station as him. I can picture myself as a kid in we called it our side yard, right? But we had this, like, football field kind of square. I go back now and look at my house when I'm showing my kids. It's a tiny little yard. But damn if it didn't feel like 100 yards in a football field. We would line it. We'd have first downs, and you'd have to, you know, get four first downs to go score a touchdown. But in our side yard, I remember fielding these high kickoffs and breaking returns like I was Brian Mitchell. But it was a huge part of the game, and why you fell in love with football was that there was a romanticism to the kick return. And you knew the returners, these Hall of Fame types like B. Mitch or Hester or whatever. That was dead. That's an endangered species. And to have 40-plus returns, the most there's been in 10 years last year, that's exactly what we want.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Mitchell, again, as you said, we work with him, but he was one of my favorite Redskins anyway before I got a chance to work with the guy. I mean, you're talking about a dude that would routinely go well in excess of 1,000 yards in terms of kick returns. Would go well in excess of 300-400 yards in terms of punt returns. So he'd be up there with some of the league leaders in yardage, despite not being an every down running back.
Oh, he's still number two all time to Jerry Rice
in yards gained. I mean, and again, they tell me why that's not in the Hall of Fame anyway. But that part of the game was all but out of there. Again, I understand how we got here. When you look at the injury rate, you look at how good kickers got where it was before, it was pretty amazing. You get a guy who could do a touchback. Then it got to the point where they're kicking it from the 35, and it was weird if you couldn't kick it out of the end zone. So all of the confluent events led to the current state of the union, and it took, I think, a little bit longer than it should have, if I'm being honest, with the NFL to look for something. It wasn't until the UFL, XFL, whatever you want to call it, came up with this way of doing it to eliminate those collisions for them to go, oh, that's not too bad. We've seen it in action. We know it looks goofy, But this actually works for, solves a lot of the needs that we had in terms of bringing that play back to a degree. And now that you've got this more dynamic, if it doesn't land in the kicking zone, it's going to the 40. If you do a touchback, it's going to the 35. You're going to put it in this zone. You are covering kicks. That's what you're doing, NFL, and that's what's happening.
How do you feel about the touchback going from the 30 to the 35? Let me ask you the question, and I'll sit it out, and then I'll answer in a second.
I love that. I think whatever you want, you can't just do this nominal thing where it's kind of a trade-off that a team is willing to have. In other words, let's say I take a one-touchdown lead against you late in the game, and you've got a dangerous return man. In the past, I'd go, I'll let you have it at the 30 with a minute left and no timeouts for a touchback. Now I'm not quite as sure. You know what I mean? Like, I want teams and coaches to have to make decisions, right? Like, that's one of the things, again, to bring it back to baseball. I lament with the DH. I don't mind it not having, you know, a pitcher go over two and miss a sacrifice bunt, but it takes a little bit of the decision-making, a little bit of the double switching, a little bit of those dynamic manager things out of the game.
Anybody can manage now.
Sure. You know? Yeah, that's what's a bit of a bummer about it. But I like that you're adding some strategy back into it, right? I like that. I want it more like whatever you want people to do, you can't just set up guardrails. You got to shrink those guardrails, right, to encourage the behavior that you want, and that's what the system is. I'm with it.
As a numbers guy who cares a lot about stats and who cares a lot about records and, you know, just being able to compare eras and things, what I don't like is that field position is changing so much when drives start. And I don't mean, you know, obviously there's short fields or every time someone punts, it's going to be a different area of the field. But in terms of where drives actually begin. So when I was a little kid, you would be first and 10 from the 20. That was football parlance. 1-10-2-0, right? Now it's first and 10 from the 25. That's what it has been for an extended period of time on a kickoff. That's where the drive begins. Last year, it became first and 10 from the 30 a whole lot. Anytime there was a touchback on a kickoff, you would start at the 30-yard line. The rule change now moves it up to the 35. We're talking about 15 yards difference in a decade or so between where a touchback on a kickoff would have had you start several years ago to right now. That is a chunk play, basically. And so all these stats came out all of last year about Washington and some of these other teams. And they're still the same, where you're comparing the percentage of drives that end in points or the percentage of drives where you don't punt or the percentage of drives where... And it's like, well, yeah, there are going to be more teams scoring for a lot of reasons. But the game is completely different now. And it's just hard to compare it to different eras where it used to be the drive started at the 20. An average field position might be the 22 over a game. And now if the drive's starting after kickoff, sometimes at the 35, an average field position is like the 34, let's say, over a game. Now I'm not going for fourth downs. You know, back in the day, I wasn't going for any fourth downs. Now I go for every fourth down. I'm never calling out my punter. So, yeah, more drives should end in points. More drives should end in touchdowns or field goal attempts than ever before. But that's just the nerd in me that likes to be able to compare eras and be able to say, all right, 12 years ago, this offense averaged 2.7 points per drive. You know, this group's averaging 3.2, so it's more elite. Well, I think now we have to throw a lot of those comparisons by generation out because field position's changing, fourth down decisions are changing, and it's just going to get harder and harder to juxtapose teams. Like when I'm trying to figure out where does Washington's elite offense last year rank against the great Rams, the greatest, you know, offense that we've seen, or some of these other groups, it gets harder to do that the more you tweak and change things. That's my only annoyance. But what is the other possibility? You know, if you don't do that, great, you can have those comparisons and it's easier, but then the game never evolves. Nothing changes after in a long period of time.
And for me, football is less hallowed statistically than others, you know, where it's
I don't even mean it that. I just mean being able to, like, if everything was the same, I could more easily figure out, are the Commanders and the Rams, who's better? Do you see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean, but I guess for me, I'm less concerned about that generally. I understand your point. I would sort of look at it as this league has evolved like nobody else. I mean, remember, 10 years ago, there was, I think, like 6 or 7 guys that ran for 1,000 yards and everyone else threw for 5,000. And now it's different, right? You're in different eras. To me, it's all about relative to what the league is doing that year. And that's how I compare. I consider it a constant that the league is excellent, that everybody's really good, that coaches are geniuses, that scouts are awesome, and everybody's kind of, you know, putting their best foot forward. So I always sort of think of it relative to league strength. But it is your point where you're trying to compare numbers historically, and it gets harder to do that.
Well, it's also just harder and harder to play any defense. And I know that the points are all the league cares about, really, but drive starting as a regularity at the 35 after a touchback feels crazy to me. It just does. I know they want it as a round five, so we've gone up five and then five and then five. I'd almost liked it if we would have gone up two and then two and then two or something, but we're up 15 yards from where we were just a very, very short time ago, and it was first and 10 from the 20. Conversation on kickoffs brought to you today on The Fan, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Commanders Giants on Sunday, our first feel on the matchup next on The Fan. The Grant and Danny Footballapalooza continuing today as we get you ready for a game week in the National Football League. Week one, Commanders Giants, Sunday afternoon on Fox. We talked to Kevin Burkhart earlier today. One of his broadcast partners over at Fox is on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And it is our buddy Mike Pereira, who is there. One of the experts for officiating covering the National Football League and a former longtime NFL official. Mike, thank you for hopping aboard. How are you?
I am great. I'm so happy that preseason is over and that we're headed into the regular season. I think it's going to be a great season.
Well, we're excited too. We got to get it in the rear view. Everybody needs that preseason, I suppose, right? But
yeah, even the officials, by the way. They
indeed.
I always felt like they were probably the ones that needed it the most, as a matter of fact. Because they have no real, off-season training, you know, other than classroom-type stuff, and going to the camps, and those three games are very valuable to them.
We'll get to the dynamic kickoff. Danny and I just talked a bunch about some of the changes a few minutes ago, but we could circle back to that with you in a moment. But otherwise, the only thing I've heard a lot about in terms of officiating changes going into the season is another huge emphasis being put on some taunting stuff. And in fact, I even saw one call that I hated in the preseason where this guy basically got up and was jumping around and got flagged. So I guess two-parter here for you, Mike. Is it true that they're trying to crack down on that again? And then the second part is why? Like, where does this come from with these grown adults out on the field that we've decided that any kind of, not even trash talk, but like jumping around is a bridge too far?
Really, there is an emphasis. But to me, and what I've seen, other than some overreaction by the officials, I mean, everything's going to be about the same. I mean, you always try to make a little bit of an impression in the preseason by calling a few things just to get everybody's attention. But you know you don't want that kind of call made during regular season games unless it's really directed at an opponent. I mean, directly at the opponent. And you know, back in my days when I was the head of officiating, there was a reason why they called me the president of the No Fun League, because I didn't like celebrations. I didn't like going to the ground. I didn't like using props. And once they got me out of there, then they relaxed the standards. And I think it's probably better. But the emphasis this year more is on the weapon shooting, you know, anything of simulating shooting a gun, brandishing a weapon. Those types of things are the ones that they're going to crack down on. That's what we've all been told. So, you know, the notion of puts the officials a little bit in a bind. Is he signaling that he made a first down, or is he doing it in such a way that he looks like he's shooting a gun? I think that's going to maybe kind of cause a little bit of consternation early. But, you know, in my mind, nothing's much going to change except you can't simulate shooting, no six shooters. no firing a rifle, no brandishing a weapon, like lifting your shirt to pretend like you have one in your, you know, in your pants. But in the end, I think it's one of these, a lot of talk, not a lot of difference when the season starts.
Mike, how will this Hawkeye situation work logistically? Just both A, just let people know kind of what's going on in the change there, and B, how does it work for the officials there on the ground?
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of this Hawkeye system. The only thing that the Hawkeye system does is replace the chains. That's all it does, okay? It does not help in spotting the ball whatsoever. So it's only when the officials put the ball on the ground, when they determine what their spot is, they put the ball on the ground, then Hawkeye measures to see if it's a first down or not. It will not adjust the spot, and I think that's where some people might be a little bit confused. And I hope, and I think it will, work a little bit better in the regular season than it did in some of the preseason games, where the delay was unbelievable to time it out, to get it to work, to put it on the scoreboard, on the television screen. We've been through this in the United Football League, and it caused some problems there too in terms of delay. But the notion is to try to speed up the process instead of having one of my favorite groups, you know, kind of waddle out on the field with the chains and hand the rod to the umpire, and then have the chains extended and the drama that goes along with that. And then, you know, once the decision is made, they get the head off the field. I mean, those jobs are priceless to those people that have them. They've been passed from generation to generation. But as with technology, the more ways we can use it to speed up things and maybe be just a little bit more accurate, I guess, because it's basically lasers as opposed to links on chains. It's just something that's going to be interesting to watch throughout the season.
Mike Pereira, Fox officiating analyst. So, Mike, along these lines, this has kind of always been one of my frustrations, is maybe too strong, but you know, one of the things I've found fascinating about officiating in the NFL is spots, right? And most of the time when I go back and watch, they're really, really
good. They're good at it.
Like, considering how fast the game's moving and the body's all over the place, guy goes down and they spot the ball perfectly. You know, I guess there's no way to have somebody in their ear to tell them exactly where to put the ball or whatever, like a wrestling match where they're telling you, all right, we're going to this move. Tell them, you know, telling the official literally, all right, we're going to this spot next. But I do wonder, you know, the one where it just seems like a complete guess is the punt out of bounds in the air. They're just walking up the sideline for eight minutes, and it's like, you're 15 yards off. You have no idea. But, like, what's your philosophy or thought on how close spotting is? Because there are games sometimes where I'm watching, and I'm like, that's off by a yard easy. And if you add those up, that's 6-7 yards this half that they've lost.
Yeah, and it is not a precise science. We know that. Actually, the kick out of bounds, the airborne kick out of bounds, I actually think that one is pretty accurate, because there is a method to that. The referee, knowing that it's going out of bounds, just stays stationary, watch the flight of the ball, and then he waits for the deep official to come up down the sideline to hit that intersection point of the flight, and where he's walking, he marks it. It's pretty good. Believe it or not. But the thing that people don't understand is the toughest spots are not necessarily in the middle of the field, although you lose sight often in the middle of the field. But if you're the official, it's the run that comes into your side zone. And I say that because if a run comes toward you in your side zone, you back off. Okay, you back off of the line of scrimmage and let the runner go by and stay in front of you. So you don't have a precise spot. You're not looking down the line when that first body part, other than the hand or foot, touches the ground. And the interesting thing is, if that run happens like that, where the line of scrimmage official has to give way, let the runner go by, it's the official, the line of scrimmage official on the other side of the field, we call it cross field mechanics, who has the full field of vision in front of him, who can be on the line of scrimmage to see. He then actually spots it, and the official on the side where the ball went mirrors him. It's pretty complicated, and yep, it's pretty frustrating too, because you look at it and say, my gosh, he missed that by a yard. And replay is involved in that. Video assist is involved in that. I mean, I think, you know, we just see so many things so great in slow motion that it seems like it should be easier than it is. But I do think technology and the fact that they have made that reviewable has made it better. But I remember back in my days, man, you know, you so often didn't get the look that you really needed to get, and you do the best you can. And I think we've moved forever and ever now to try to bring perfection to officiating, which is never going to happen. But that doesn't mean you still strive to make things better. And I think that technology has helped in that area.
Mike Pereira with us here on G&D. All right, walk folks through the kickoff. How's it going to be different? How might it play out this year? What are folks going to see?
Well, I'm kind of one of the guys that didn't like it going in last year. It just kind of didn't make sense to me that, you know, we would have a live ball where actually what 20 players couldn't move until the ball hit the ground, you know, or was touched. And but I grew to be okay with it. And I guess for a couple of reasons. Number one, the kickoff remained in the game. It was headed to extinction. You know, when the rate of return, one every five was being returned, you're taking obviously a big play out of the game. And so the fact that there were more was good. More returns was good. And then when you look at the concussions and however they figure them out, the fact is that the number was down. When you compare the number of concussions in a regular scrimmage play, if you take a look at that ratio per play, the number of concussions per kickoff came down to about the same as the number of concussions per scrimmage play. So that's good. So what held it back was the fact that, you know, teams, if they didn't feel they had a good kickoff to defend team, you know, kickoff into the end zone, you know, last year was, you know, put it on the 30-yard line as opposed to the 25 the year before. So the 5 yards wasn't worth the risk. And so how do you get more in? Well, you know, you take that touchback and put it to the 35-yard line. And now you're talking about a significant difference. You know, you're talking about that drive start at the 35. That's going to force teams who wanted to kick it in the end zone all the time. It's going to force them to defend. So I think it's probably safe when the league says that they're hopeful that the return rate is going to go to like 60% returns. I mean, in the Spring League, the United Football League, we were shooting for 90% returns. And we were, that's really just about where we've been at. Of course, we kicked off from the 20, but, and that obviously makes quite a bit of a difference. But I like where it's going. It's back in the game. It's going to be more back in the game this year. And, you know, as long as it's deemed to be as safe as any other play in football, then I'm now a convert.
You'll be watching Mike Pereira again all fall long, educating everybody on the rules of the league and giving opinions on what he's seeing from an officiating standpoint. He is the former VP of officiating in the NFL and the rules analyst over at Fox Sports. So, Mike, last one for me. If you could change any rule, you get appointed rules czar and the commissioner is on the line with you. What would you change if you got to make one sweeping adjustment?
Well, let me be clear. The commissioner's not going to call me, you know, but if for some reason he did, I'd go with my same old one. Look, I was a deep official when I was on the field in the league. The most difficult call that you have to make to me without question is pass interference. Everybody's moving. The defender's moving. The receiver's moving. The ball is in the air. You're moving. And then there's the added pressure that if that's 40 yards downfield, you're talking about a 40, 50-yard penalty. And you know what? You're not always right because it's so difficult. So staring the 40-yard or 50-yard mistake, you know, in the eyes is pretty tough. And I've always been a proponent of the college rule that says that it's a maximum 15-yard penalty. I think it's, you know, the fact that offensive pass interference is a maximum 10-yard penalty in the NFL. And it just seemed to me not to be equitable, especially when I saw so many when I ran the program, and you'd feel terrible because guy would make a call, defensive pass interference, 40 yards down the field, and you would have to evaluate that call. And you look at it and say it was incorrect. You just awarded 40 free yards. And so I would go to the competition committee practically every year and say, let's go to the college rule. And the response would be, no, we're not going to do that because we'll take away the deep vertical passing game. And I go, no, if you watch Saturday football, if you're close enough to try to make a play, if you're close enough to commit pass interference, you're trying to make a play. They don't tackle people. And I even said, okay, if they do, like on a double move, just reach and tackle somebody, then we'll make that a spot foul if it's over 15 yards. But I couldn't budge the group who were so concerned about the deep that deep vertical passing game that it I couldn't make any progress. Now in the spring leagues we do have that, and it's interesting. We thought, well, what kind of feedback will we get? Will people be unhappy with that? In reality, nobody even noticed. I mean, it just became a 15-yard penalty, just like if you slugged a guy 15 yards. Well, now if you pull the jersey and restrict the ball in the air 15 yards, okay, that seems equitable to me.
Mike, awesome to catch up with you, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the start of the season.
You got it. Take care.
Great info from Mike Pereira of Fox Sports with us on Grant and Danny. First Field, Commanders, Giants. At least one analyst is struggling to pick that football game. We'll get to that next. The Commanders have announced that their week one game with the Giants this Sunday at Northwest Stadium is indeed a sellout. I didn't think it wouldn't be, but several days out from the kickoff, very encouraging and a good sign. There will be some Giants fans there for sure, but I think that is indicative of excitement in this town. And it was a long, long time when for many, many home games, there was no chance of a sellout. And if there was, it just meant that you're going to be overrun by visitors. But after an NFC Championship game dash in the postseason last year and the Jaden Daniels hype of his second season and this team with very high expectations. In fact, when was the last time they went into a year and you were this excited or anxious about the start of the year because everyone thought they're going to be really good?
2013.
Like, that would be the easiest answer, but I don't even think then, because Griffin was coming off of a very serious injury and there were a lot of questions about that. It was
We thought they were answered with the All In for Week One documentary and everything like that.
But I don't think it was as likely in 2013 that they were really good as it is now.
Well, we know now. We know that now. But at the time, I mean, it's 2013 is the first one that comes to mind. Gibbs' return. I mean, for my generation, just the idea that Joe Gibbs was coaching just automatically meant we're going to the NFC title game again. You know what I mean? Just like because he walked on water. And you realize, like, it ain't that easy. Again, he was still as good as anybody that's been here, go to the playoffs two times in 4 years. That's better than anybody else in the last couple of decades. But, yeah, he realized not even he could overcome everything.
Yeah, I think people don't give him enough credit for Gibbs 2.0, which is, from maybe 10,000 feet up, viewed as some kind of failure or whatever. But in 05 and in 07, by way of 5-4 game winning streaks down the stretch of those seasons, they made – 2 playoff appearances in 3 years, what nobody else has been able to do. And he did it with Dan Snyder at the controls, who he was able to somewhat keep at bay because Dan loved him so much and would kind of say yes to him a lot, more so than other people. But you were pushing a boulder up a hill.
Oh, yeah.
Gibbs did a lot of good there. Looking at the odds for the Commanders and the Giants, Washington is a 6-point favorite almost everywhere. You can get them at 6.5 points as a favorite against the Giants on FanDuel. Pretty much every other book I'm looking at is right around 6. It opened at 7.5, but the line has come down 1.5. This was Chris Sims of NBC on a show with Kay Adams talking about underdogs. She asked him, of the 5 underdogs that she brought up, who's the team most likely to pull off an upset this weekend? And this is what Sims said.
I think if I had to choose one right there, the one I would choose was the New York Giants. Not that I'm expecting huge things from the Giants, but I do think the Giants are going to be more of a pain in the butt than people realize. Their defense, and they're desperate, and they've played well. And you know, we know that you know their butts are on the hot seat there in New York, right? This is a big game for them. And I do. I look at that, and their offense is a little better than you think. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Giants to upset Washington, or at least cover the spread there.
I get the logic. I'm picking Washington. I'm going to pick them at the end of the week when we make our predictions. But it is not surprising to me to hear a national analyst thinking they'll at least cover and could win the game outright. Just because, and he laid this out, number one, their defense is going to be exceptional, especially up front. Adding Abdul Carter as a pass rusher to Dexter Lawrence and Brian Burns and the group that they have. But on top of that, I think Malik Nabers is a matchup problem for Washington. We saw that last year with his speed, explosiveness, his twitch at the line of scrimmage. He feasted on them a couple of times. And they do have the urgency as a staff that you're not going to have when it was a NFC Championship game magical run in D.C. last year. If they get off to a slow start, people's heads roll. Joe Shane gets fired. Brian Daboll's out of a job. They have to start fast. So if there's such a thing as needing a game more in week one, whereas Washington's like a normal 8.5, 9, the Giants might be a 10 in their early season games. They can't really afford to go 0-3, 1-4 out of the chute, because then you're Jay Gruden a bunch of years ago when you get fired before the year ever gets going.
Yeah, and I care about recent sample too with these two teams. Washington could have absolutely lost both of those games against the Giants, should have definitely lost the first one. We're very fortunate to emerge with a win. And in the second one, the Giants outgained them, had longer time of possession, outscored them in the second half. And that was with kind of that, you know, makeshift, not much offense outside of Malik Nabers, Daniel Jones, whatever the hell that was. They're better now, talking about the Giants. Washington has not played like Washington that they did for the rest of that season against those Giants for whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, remember, for years, Kirk Cousins just would have bad games against them and that secondary. And you go, what the hell's going on with it? Whatever it is, the way that they play, something, some way, somehow, they're always friskier against Washington than they are against most other teams. So I don't love this matchup for that reason. I didn't see a whole lot from Washington in the preseason. They kind of put everybody in bubble wrap and said, we're good. We're one of the elite. We're ready to rock and roll. I'm still of the belief that we're not going to see Terry McLaurin be Terry McLaurin yet. Their number two receiver, Noah Brown, I haven't seen at all coming off of injury. I got to see Deebo Samuel some, but is that enough to say that now everybody's ready to rock and roll and they're going to hit the ground running and be as excellent as everybody is talking about? I don't know that. I don't feel great about this early season matchup here.
As soon as we come back on Grant and Danny, we're going to announce our weekly regulars for this NFL football season that we'll have on the show each and every week. So excited to do that. We'll also tell you which road trips we're going to be taking this season with our friends Kondori and Murad. And we're going to hit some Commanders burning questions as well. We're taking you up to 6:15 on the Fan.